Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on a Monday. There is a lot going on, including Rob Sutter on board. Hi, Rob. Great to have you with us.
Good afternoon, Steve. How are you?
Doing really, really well.
Thanks.
Great
pleasure to be here.
Have you on board as part of the family here. We will get to several items today. First of all, we're brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Why? They get you the best insurance for the best price. Oh, and if there's a claim, they're all over it. They jump all over it. And it's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll touch on it briefly, but these are the words that finally, after 18 years, people have been wondering if Peyton Manning would ever say. He did say it today in Denver.
There's just something about 18 years. 18 is a good number. And today, I retire from pro football.
He goes out a winner without question because, of course, they won the Super Bowl. And the difference between now and, I want to say, was it 4 years ago? I was in Indianapolis. In fact, the press conference literally took place across the street from the hotel we were staying in for the Big Ten tournament when the Colts then cut him. It was this week. And the difference between now and then was that when Peyton Manning left the Colts, and the Indianapolis newspapers were just filled with pages and pages and pages about his career, what he and his wife had done for children's hospitals, things like that. It really was a remarkable set of stories to read in Indy that at that time. But the difference between now and then, back then, he had multiple options of people who wanted him. Arizona wanted him. Houston wanted him. The 49ers wanted him. Miami wanted him. Denver wanted him. One thing that Peyton Manning has found out in the past week is that there's nobody at this stage that really wants to take on Peyton Manning or his contract for a guy who's going to be 40 years old next month. And that was a big part of it. That was a big part of it. It made the decision to retire easier. Great career. I only was around him one time, and that was at Super Bowl Media Day 2 years ago. He handled himself like a pro's pro. But that's the only time I've ever been around him, and that's the only impression I have of him as of seeing him in person. That's it. Incredible career. Not much to say about that. And, you know, Dan Patrick went into it extensively earlier today. He just went into it and above the noise. We've got a lot we have to do here along the way. And we've got wrestling and we've got basketball to talk about. And then we're going to check in with Bob Osmussen from the Champaign Gazette. Like, why are you going to have Bob Osmussen from the Champaign Gazette on? They hired Lovie Smith today. We're going to check in with Bob about how everything came down at Illinois, where they changed coaches. Now, listen to the time frame of this. Illinois might be the only program in the history of college football that had one head coach in charge of training camp, one head coach in charge of the season, and now a new head coach in charge of spring practice. That's the kind of year they've had. That's the kind of year at Illinois. They're a mess. And we'll talk to Bob Osmussen about that a little bit later and discuss the mess. Wrestling, of course, won the Big Ten championship. Penn State did with three champions. Nolf lost to Martinez. Martinez got ripped off. To be honest with you, there was an escape, and it was obvious it was a takedown. And the officials looked at the replay, and they did not get the same replay that you have at home. That's not good. They should be getting the same stuff you get at home, because you get a lot of good stuff at home. And they couldn't really tell whether it was or not. So, in the end, the right guy won. When you win and you lose and there's a rematch, the guy that lost pours through and makes adjustments. As much as the person who wins tries to convince themselves that there might be an adjustment to be made, they won. So they don't adjust. Martinez did adjust, wrestled well, and he beat Nolf. Now it's Nolf's turn to adjust when they go back to Madison Square Garden. Obviously, Morgan McIntosh, Bo Nickel, Zane Rutherford, outstanding. Rutherford was the outstanding wrestler of the Big Ten Championship. He was great. Penn State had 6 finalists. That's great. Only 3 of them won. Okay, that brings with it some pause. And only 8 got through to the NCAAs based on the mat merit. 2 spots did not. There's some talk that by Wednesday we'll find out the fate of Morelli as to maybe Morelli gets to go or not as a wild card. We'll find out. Overall, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They won it. Overall, 3 guys won championships, what everyone expects. What people didn't expect was Nolf to lose again. What they didn't expect was 2 open spots and only 8 getting through. So it wasn't a perfect championship for Penn State, but Penn State is and has been for decades a true blue blood in wrestling. Consistently in the top 10, won the national title in 1953, and what Cale Sanderson has done here has been remarkable. 7 years, 5 Big Ten championships, the doors open to 7 years and 5 national championships. He has been outstanding in every way. He's taken a blue blood program, which Penn State Wrestling is. Penn State Wrestling is an absolute blue blood wrestling program. And he's awakened the sleeping giant, and he's made it great. He has made it the gold standard. And there's no doubt that they are a blue blood program in wrestling and have been for decades. Yeah, obviously Iowa had its unbelievable run. There's no question. But Penn State was always really good. EWL years with Rich Lorenzo and so forth. Then eventually John Fritz and Troy Sunderland, now with Cale. I mean, Cale's now made it the gold standard. So he was able to come in and awaken the sleeping giant. Now let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Penn State basketball has never been a blue blood. They are not North Carolina. They are not Kentucky. They are not Duke. They are not Michigan State. They aren't UConn. They aren't Indiana. They aren't UCLA. We know that. I've lived it for every single day for 34 years. I felt yesterday was the most important win of the Patrick Chambers era so far. I'll explain why in a moment as we come back on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Talked going into the break about Penn State Wrestling being a blue blood program, and it is, and has been for a long time. And then Cale Sanderson comes in, and essentially what Cale does is he awakens the sleeping giant and turns it into a giant. Which is very, you know, very important what he's done. Tremendous what he's done. Now let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Penn State basketball is not a blue blood program. Hasn't been. It's always fighting for recognition, always fighting for its spot in the limelight. Interesting, though, I mean, let's face it, the two programs at Penn State that get on SportsCenter are football and men's basketball. Just the way it is, because it's football and men's basketball. The level of consistency of the program has been anything but. Bruce Parkhill was able to put together four consecutive 20-win seasons in 89, 90, 91, and 92. And then they entered the Big Ten, and Bruce had to start all over again. And by the third year, he had them in the NIT and them being a 20-game winner again. And then Jerry Dunn got them to the NCAA tournament in 96. The John Bach years, and Johnny Bach just passed away about a month ago, were up and down. The Dick Harter years were up and down in a really hard fight. I mean, for Dick Harter, it was a hard fight here. Bruce Parkhill took over a program that was down and out. They won 5 games their first year. They won 8 the second year. I'm depressing myself. I lived through it. Then was able to win 20 in a row, four straight years, and then, you know, fell back in the first year in the Big Ten, got a little bit better in the second year. Then I think got to 9-9 the third year, and they won 20 games, and they got to the NIT Final Four. In fact, they lost to Canisius, coached by John Beilein. They beat Canisius, coached by John Beilein, in the third place game. Then Jerry got to the NCAA tournament. He had high hopes that the program, they just opened the Jordan Center, that 8 consecutive sellouts in 1996. All 8 games in the Jordan Center were sold out in 96, and Penn State got as high as 8th in the polls. And I thought to myself, all right, they're on their way here now. Yeah, Dan Earle, Pete Lisicki. I mean, Earle was just what was Earl at that point? I guess Earl was just a sophomore. Lisicki was a freshman. I'm thinking to myself, all right, you know, I'm in for some good times here. And then Dan Earl's back went out. And in 96, they took a tremendous drop to 97. Boom. 98, they bring in Joe Crispin. And Dan Earl gets hurt again. But they do make the NIT, and they get to the Final Four again. In fact, they make the NIT championship game before they lost to Minnesota. I'm thinking, okay, all right, here we go. Well, no, here we go. 99 was the single most disappointing year I've ever broadcast of Penn State basketball, easily. You had Earl, you had Crispin, you had Booth. I mean, you had a really good basketball team. And they finished under 500. They lost 3 times to Northwestern. I'm looking around like, what the heck happened here? 2000, they finished the regular season under 500 by a game. Then they made a little run in the Big Ten tournament, including winning a quarterfinal game against top-seeded Ohio State. That put them over 500, put them in the NIT, and they got the NIT Final Four again. And then 2001, they could beat anybody, anywhere, anytime. Temple. Their only non-conference loss was at NC State. The Hofstra made the NCAA tournament. Penn State beat them in the Garden. Princeton made the NCAA tournament. Penn State beat them. They went to Ohio State and won. Plus the home games they won in 2001. And then in the Big Ten tournament, they beat Michigan State, which was ranked 2nd in the nation. They went to the NCAA tournament, beat Providence by 10, went to the next round, beat North Carolina, went to the Sweet 16. I mean, that team, the 2001 team, could beat anyone, anywhere, anytime. But then, that was it. So here's the graph, right? The graph is kind of up, then down, then up. Okay, some consistency, then down, enter the Big Ten, then start to get up, and then back down, then up, and down, and up, and a little bit more, and then down, down for a while. 7 wins in 2002, 7 wins in 2003. Ed DeChellis comes in, tries to get things going. You know, runs into some bad luck. Gets Gary Claxton, heck of a player. Gets Jamel Cornley, undersized, but heck of a player. Right. Well, 2006, they make the NIT, but they lose the game to Rutgers. They fall below 500. All right. Then you get to 2008, Claxton's senior year, Cornley's junior year. Here we go. Penn State opens up in eight with a Big Ten win at Northwestern. Goes down to Champaign 3 days later, wins at Illinois. So now they're off to a 2-0 start in the conference, and both wins were on the road. You're thinking, okay, here we go. Then they play Wisconsin. Claxton blows out his knee. Then before the month's out, Cornley's out for the year. Two guys you can still afford to lose. Then in 9, awesome year. Taylor Battle company, they win 27 games. Cornley's the MVP. They win the NIT at Madison Square Garden. 37 buses of students go. Enthusiasm's high, the whole deal. They go into 10. And in 10, they go 3-14 in games decided by 6 points or less. Ugh. Then 11, they make the NCAA tournament. And then Ed leaves in June. Nobody leaves in June in basketball. So Pat's come in. So now this is what Pat's been able to accomplish now in up to his fifth year. There have been signature wins over Michigan, ranked fourth, Iowa, ranked fourth, Indiana, Big Ten champion. There have been wins like that. Iowa in the Big Ten tournament last year. Huge win. But yesterday was maybe the biggest win he's had. And the reason I think that was the biggest win he's had since he's been here, you've now had three consecutive years of 16 wins or more. They haven't had three wins consecutively of 16 wins or more since that 20-victory stretch I talked about in 89, 90, 91, and 92. They haven't had it since. Because, again, the graph's up and down, up and down, up and down all the time. Like, more down than up. But yeah, you know the story. They won 7 games in the Big Ten. They overachieved a bit this year. They got a recruiting class that right now is ranked 18th in the country. So for the first time in 24 years, there's at least some level of stability that, while not being a blue blood, which they are not, is showing some level of stability of Penn State basketball. And after losing that game to Northwestern Thursday night, they played tight Thursday night. They played 10 really good minutes. Unfortunately for them, the game's 40. They played really tight on Thursday night. Yesterday, they just played. They beat them. And they won it. And now they go to the Big Ten tournament with a little bit of momentum. But that may have been the biggest win he's had yet, despite the fact that there have been two wins over top five ranked teams at the time and so forth. That may have been the biggest win yet for the reasons I just outlined.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. This day in sports history, very quickly, Prince of Wales Trophy awarded for the first time in 1939 to the Boston Bruins. 1951, Ezzer Charles, 15-round decision over Jersey Joe Walcott to win the heavyweight boxing championship. 1954, the Soviet Union beat Canada in the first international ice hockey competition. Whoa. 1970, Austin Carr of Notre Dame scored 61 points against Ohio University, the highest scoring game by an individual in NCAA tournament history. 1974, New Orleans became the 18th NBA franchise. They named them the Jazz. Then they moved into Salt Lake City, where they're still the Utah Jazz, even though there's very little jazz in Utah. And also, 1983, ESPN first televised professional football game on cable, USFL game between the Birmingham Stallions and the Michigan Panthers. And that's a look at this day in sports history. Still to come, Peyton Manning's letter to Joe Paterno after Joe was fired at Penn State. We'll talk now with Nathan Davis, the head basketball coach at Bucknell. And Nathan, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
Hello?
Coach, how are you today?
Coach, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. How are you all doing today?
Doing all right. Obviously a tough one, especially at that particular time. But you have to regather the group because you do have an NIT bid that's automatic for you. So what's your approach now?
Well, we talked. I don't want to go into a lot of it because I think some of it does need to stay in the locker room between us. But I said we've had ups and downs all year long, and we've shown our character by coming back from tough situations before, and we got to do it again. We got an opportunity to continue playing. We're certainly very disappointed with the way we played the other night and the outcome, but that's the way it goes in one and done sometimes. You don't get what you want, and you got to deal with it. We've still got an opportunity, so we got to try to make the most of it.
Well, as somebody who's broadcast a dozen NITs in his career, I've always felt the opening game was the biggest one because that's when you find out who's interested and who's not. So right. Give me imparting the importance to them, and how much will you lean on your leaders to impart to them the importance of this, because you can get to the Garden.
A lot. I mean, you got to go about it. Like, it's obviously any situation, you got to win your first game, but getting the NIT is not easy, especially the mid-major school. I mean, if you don't win your regular season, you're not going to get to go there. Winning your regular seasons is a pretty big accomplishment in any league. So there's a lot for us to be proud of, and now we have a chance to go out there and prove again that we're pretty good. And we're going to get to play someone, I'm sure, that's going to be very good also. So let's go out there and see what happens. Let's enjoy it.
For you, what will the value be of the extra practice for your younger players that you'll check out for next year?
I think any time you get to practice and get to play, there's so much of there's no substitute for experience. The only way to get experience is to play more. And so it's, like you said, it's a way they're going to get to practice. We're going to get another 10 days or so of practice in, get a chance to get up and down, and you just get a chance to play more. And it can only help. Can't hurt.
One thing I'm not familiar with, I don't know what the schedule is at Bucknell. Are you on spring break now? Is it next week? Did it already happen?
We go next week. So Friday, this Friday is our last day of class, and they'll be off all next week.
Okay, so you'll have an opportunity to go into the NIT in a basketball-only situation like it's Christmas then.
Correct. So it should be, that'll make it, certainly with the speed way stuff goes and all that, it'll make it much easier for us.
All right, across the board.
Maybe not easier.
yeah, less complicated would be right. For this basketball team, talk about the younger players. Where's a couple of areas of growth that you feel you need to start seeing that are keeping you from being well-rounded? How about that? Where it's just a slight missing piece here or a slight missing piece there?
Well, I think a big thing is just to be more aggressive, especially for the younger guys, is to not wait for things to happen, to start trying to make things happen. Now, not forcing it, but I'm seeing advantages and knowing where you can take advantage of your talents.
The ability to play, what has it meant for your team to play with the lead in games? And I ask that question because, I've been doing Penn State here forever, and I've watched this team this year, and look, you're not going to beat Michigan State, obviously, but you play most of the game with Northwestern from behind. Yesterday they play Illinois most of the game ahead. They win. What has that meant psychologically for your kids? Does it mean anything? Are you fine in front? Are you fine in back? Where are you?
I think that overall we're okay in all those situations, but at the same time say that it's always better to be ahead. You always have a little more leeway and things like that as opposed to having to make extra plays to catch up. You don't need as many things to go as well for you when you're already ahead. So I think any coach, any player would tell you they'd much rather be in front than behind throughout the game.
Your points per possession is pretty strong this year. Your points per possession defensively is, I'll be fair, I'll say okay in terms of comparison to everybody else. All right, how is that? Is that okay?
That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, it's okay. Where do you need to button down defensively where you're making sure they're not maximizing their possessions against you?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first thing is doing a better job consistently just guarding the ball. And that can be guarding penetration, helping guys up behind you with some pressure on the ball to get some deflection so they can recover when they're out of position. And the next thing would be defensive rebounding out of rotations. We give up a lot. And even in our last game against Holy Cross, a big factor was we gave up a lot of offensive rebounds, even when they weren't really trying to get the rebounds because we ran in to get the ball as opposed to blocking out. Now, the good thing is, like you mentioned with our points per possession during the non-conference was pretty bad. But in league play, they actually got a lot better.
Right.
And we ended up leading the league in points per possession allowed. So that was good. So we made some strides. But saying that, it's certainly not where we'd like it to be moving forward.
Yeah, no question. There was a saying I heard here for 32 years, because if you're around Joe Paterno for 32 years, you hear a lot of sayings. And one was, you're never as good as you think you are when you win, but you're never as bad as you think you are when you lose. How tough is it right now to impart that perspective because of the disappointment?
I think first off, Coach Paterno is exactly right with that. We say that all the time ourselves, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that's different is just because of the way our league tournament stuff is, we have such a long break. So, like, we played Thursday and took off Friday and just came in on Saturday and Sunday and went for an hour and took off again today with classes and things like that. So, I think in some respects, having some time helps. We're not, like, back grinding at it right away. But on the other side, it would be nice to go back out there and just be able to play right away, too. After
yeah,
the way
exactly.
It went. So it's finding a balance. I mean, you don't want to, there's no point in killing them right now and that type of stuff, but there's still an opportunity here to take advantage of the time and get better. We're going to graduate four guys, three that played a lot for us. I think we've got some younger guys in the program that are talented and be ready to step in, but this time is valuable for them. So we got to take a chance of that. And we feel like we can go out and win some games. And so we want to make sure we put ourselves in position to win games. So that's what we've been talking about, is we got a chance to play. And there's no reason we're going to draw something. There's no reason we can't win a game, at least. It's just a game. All we can win is the first game. So we can win it. We can
right, exactly.
Hopefully believe we can win the first game. So we want to do everything we can to put ourselves in position to give ourselves a chance to win that game.
Nathan, because of the gap between games, which will be significant, will you practice a bit differently before you play your next one, or will you try to keep it the same?
For this, really up until this coming weekend, we're going to do it pretty differently. We're going to do a lot more just playing, doing a lot of skill work and a lot more playing to keep conditioning and keep kind of in that game-type shape thing. So, like yesterday, over the weekend, we basically played a full game to do that kind of stuff, along with just trying to get our skills better. We'll do the same kind of thing tomorrow when we get back on the floor. And then as we get later in the week, we'll start getting back to drilling more things defensively and that type of stuff as well. It's harder to do some of that stuff when you don't know who you're going to play. Anyway,
right.
Not sure like what you're
right, exactly.
For,
yeah.
But we'll start going
yeah.
back through and reviewing some general principles as we get towards the end of the week that we need to clean up.
Can you then do a little bit more of individual player development?
Yes, and that's been a big part of what we've done so far the last few days, and we'll continue to do throughout this week is to work on a lot of skill development.
This is a philosophical question. The women have gone to four quarters, 10 4-minute quarters. The men, of course, have stayed with 2 20-minute halves. What do you think of the four-quarter idea, or would you rather just stay with 2 20-minute halves?
I'll put it to you this way. If they were to call today and say we're going to four quarters immediately, I'd be all for it.
Okay.
I think
interesting.
And the main thing is I think that it will allow really for a better flow in the game. You get in the men's game, and especially with the way fouls are being called, it's rare now that you go under the 10-minute point of a half where both teams aren't already shooting bonus free throws. So if you go more than two or three possessions without someone shooting a free throw, that's a long time. If you go to quarters, you're now resetting it at the end of each quarter. So it'll be fewer free throws and more free-flowing play.
Interesting answer. Very interesting. Glad you gave
it.
Thanks
you?
So much. No. Did it surprise me? The way you phrased it at the end, absolutely not. I just thought the only thing that surprised me was the fact that we're so used to 20-minute halves. That's
right.
What I found interesting about it, because that's what you've always had, and
mm-hmm.
I thought that's why I found your answer so interesting. I really did. Fascinating. Because I don't know how I feel about it.
Soon too. I'd be surprised if in the next few years you don't see a switch. I think.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons why they had the women do it this year, because I think it's been a trailblazing move for them to see, okay, let's see how it works first there. And they were willing to do it, and I think it's opening the door to the possibility of the men doing it. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I hope we do. I would be all for it.
Okay. Hey, appreciate the time. We will talk next week, and next week we'll have an advantage of actually knowing an opponent.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be on our way to go somewhere at this point, or getting ready to.
Sounds great to me.
Maybe even arrived.
Even arrived as well, even better. Coach, thanks so much. You're tremendous as always. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coach Nathan Davis of Bucknell. That was a really interesting answer there at the end about the four-quarter thing. That was, wow. And his answer makes complete sense to me. Complete sense to me. I just thought that maybe everybody's been so used to over the years, it's always been 20-minute halves, always been 20-minute halves. The women went to four quarters this year. And I'll tell you something I'm trying to get used to when I'm looking at watching a game and I'm seeing the bottom line, I see a couple of women's scores pop up there, and I see 28 to 23 second. I'm thinking 28 to 23 in the second half. What kind of game is this? And I go, wait, hold on. It's the second quarter. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Mentioned earlier that something I remember from a few years ago, but Peyton Manning wrote a letter to Joe Paterno after everything happened here. It was in November of 2012 he wrote the letter. And now, Archie Manning, of course, I think Joe coached him in an All-Star game. And they stay close. And Eli Manning, for example, went to camp here. And Jay Paterno wrote about it today in his column in StateCollege.com. And he said that Peyton's history for respect for the history of the game. Became evident in the letter. I'll support that he wrote to Joe 5 days after things ended here. And in the letter, Peyton mentioned to Joe the Penn State teammates that he had played with in the NFL and how much love and respect they had for Joe, and he wanted to make sure he knew that. But he took the time to write Joe a letter, and again, he wrote it, and Joe got it, I think, 5 days after all this happened. So it was before Penn State went out and played Ohio State that week. And, of course, that was the week Joe found out he had cancer. I think he found out earlier in the week, and then we found out on Friday. I remember we got on the plane to go to Ohio State, and that's when Tom Bradley told me. And it's, it just shows you the class in that regard as to what he did. And again, it was only 5 days after, and he sent him the letter. His respect, his admiration for him, what his players, former players had said about him, that he had the privilege of working with and playing with in the NFL level and so forth. And again, Joe, of course, knew Archie Manning, and then Eli Manning went to camp here. Peyton Manning did not, but Eli Manning did. So just thought that was just an added line of interest in all of this. Sam Bradford, we mentioned it last week, had signed a 2-year, $36 million deal with the Eagles. $26 million is guaranteed. There is a real scarcity of high-caliber 16-game NFL quarterbacks out there. Lost one of them today in Peyton Manning, who retired. The Eagles were between a rock and a hard place, as far as I was concerned. Bradford has shown that he's good enough to be a good NFL quarterback. But at the same time, as we all know, you know, Bradford hasn't done enough on a consistently to make you feel like anything's going in a certain direction. I just talked about extensively about Penn State basketball's lack of consistency through the years, and that now they've put together three straight 16-win seasons. And while that's not blue blood level, that's still a level Penn State hasn't been to in a while in terms of trying to get its growth going. And that was a big growth moment, as far as I'm concerned, to reach some level of consistency that now is a threshold to build from there. And in the NFL, you know, a guy like Bradford doesn't have that level of consistency. He hadn't played enough. But he has played it competently enough where the serious question has to be in the front office, all right, if not him, then whom? The RG3 deal is over in Washington. He was released today by the Redskins. They go 1 year Kirk Cousins. Now, Cousins still has, you know, somebody can still negotiate with him, but they have right of first refusal. Oh, and by the way, if that team signs him, they get two first-round picks. The Broncos are in the same spot right now with Brock Osweiler, because the Texans want to talk to Brock Osweiler. Interesting. Next up, though, we're going to talk about Illinois football. You're like, Illinois football? That's been a bizarre situation. Tim Beckman gets fired the week of the opener with Kent State. Bill Cubitt, the offensive coordinator, steps in, does a good job. When the season's over, he gets a two-year contract. Not five, not six, but two. Athletic director is then hired in Illinois. His first day on the job is Saturday morning. The first thing he does is fire Bill Cubitt. Now, the group I feel badly for in all this is, look, Bill Cubitt has a buyout. He's in his 60s, I understand. It has to be massively disappointing to him, but at least he has a buyout and a backup. Assistant coaches you feel badly for because they're not going to have the kind of buyouts in their contracts that the head coach does. And now they're scrambling at a time where nobody's handing out jobs. Now, some may stick with the Illinois staff if Lovie Smith chooses to go that direction. And then there's the other people, the video coordinators, the director of football operations. You know, people like that. I mean, the director of football operations, he and his wife just had a baby a couple weeks ago, and they're feeling pretty good that they're finally getting something going there. You know, maybe establishing their family, maybe a little security. Cubitt's going to be there 2 years. Spring practice is going to begin on Friday. Well, now they've had to push spring practice back. He fires him, but he brings in Lovie Smith. Now, from his point of view, Josh Whitman's point of view, he takes the job. Illinois's been a mess. They've been a mess. And he wants to send in the right direction, and he doesn't want an interim direction. He wants a full-time committed direction. So while I feel badly for Bill Cubitt and his staff, and I do, because suddenly a lightning bolt hits them out of nowhere on Saturday and they're out, I understand Josh Whitman from a professional point of view, the way he's doing this, saying, look, I'm taking over and we got to start winning now, and I got to have people in place that are my people, because we've been treading water for too long and at times almost drowning. So it's been a bad show out in Champaign for a while. They're hoping Lovie Smith turns it around. And they're in the division, by the way, in the Big Ten to turn it around, because trying to turn around a team in the East, not so easy. Turning around a team in the West, a little wider swath to cut through. Bob Osmussen from the Champaign Post-Gazette, next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury.